Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As much as the candidate questionnaire is a time-honored tradition, so is the right to ignore it or placate the special interest group or individual who sent it with a response that ignores the questions. What's the upside and what's the downside of that tack? We decided to tell this tale through the lens of American Association of People with Disabilities, which last week, their nonpartisan Disability Vote Project last week announced that their candidate questionnaire results were as interesting for those who did not respond as for those who did. Joining us later on will be Mark Melman. He's a top Democratic pollster and communications consultant. Also joining us will be longtime Ohio Republican political strategist Bob Clegg. And right now, the folks who inspired the show, American Association of People with Disabilities Vice President for Organizing and Civic Engagement, Jim Dixon. Jim leads the nonpartisan Disability Vote Project. It's a coalition of 36 disability-related groups across the country that focus on voter registration and education. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Ability Center of Greater Toledo's Public Policy Director, Sue Hetrick. Sue is also coordinator of the Ohio Disability Vote Coalition. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Thank you, Ann.
At the outset, I mentioned that your group, the Ohio Disability Vote Coalition, had remarked that the candidate questionnaire results were as interesting for those who did not respond as for those who did. What did you mean by that, Sue?
Well, we just always find it interesting that when we send something out that's so critical to people with disabilities and we're the largest minority in the country, the candidates choose not to respond. And that speaks volumes to the credibility that people with disabilities as a voting bloc have.
Jim, you've been doing this for a long time. It's your 25th year sort of in the business of getting the vote out in one stripe or another, and the ninth with the disability rights community. Is this response rate or whatever the rate was, which was low apparently, pretty typical, or is it unusual compared to other states? What's your experience?
It's pretty typical. What generally we find is that candidates who know the issues respond. Candidates who either don't know the issues or who are going to vote against our interests don't respond.
So should somebody how can somebody draw a conclusion? How does one know whether it's that they don't know the issues or they would be in conflict with the issues by not participating?
Well, you know, from the point of view of a person with a disability, it doesn't matter because the consequence is the same. If the elected official doesn't know the issues, the elected official is going to vote the wrong way. These are complicated and sometimes expensive issues.
Tell me about the voting block of the disability community.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Tell me about what the demographics are of the disability community in terms of voting.
Okay. In the presidential election, about 57% of people with disabilities voted.
Of eligible voters, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect in the primary, in this year's elections, mm-hmm. our numbers are going to drop at the same rate as the able-bodied, except in places like Ohio where we're doing phone banking to get people out to vote.
Sue, what was the main goal of the questionnaire? This was Ohio's second year with the questionnaire. What was your goal?
Well, the goal of the Ohio Disability Vote Coalition is to register people to vote and to educate voters and to engage them in the political process. 16% of Ohioans have a disability, and they're not, as Jim has said, engaged in the political process. Secondly was to, as he said, highlight those issues of public policy that are of particular importance to people with disabilities. So putting that in the on the radar, I guess, of the campaigns. Campaigns don't ever address these issues. They're never addressed in polls. So we wanted to bring those to the forefront and kind of tease out what potential public policymaker, legislator knows about those issues and how they'd handle them and address them. Also, what we want to do is put those issues at the forefront of people with disabilities. They're important to people with disabilities every single day of their lives, the 10 questions that we chose. However, when they go to the polls, they don't always keep those issues front and center when they're electing a candidate. They might look at a whole host of other issues. And we'd like to make those primary focuses when people with disabilities and their families go to the polls.
My guest, Sue Hetrick, she is the coordinator for the Ohio Disability Vote Coalition, and also Jim Dixon. He leads the Nonpartisan Disability Vote Project. It's a coalition of 36 disability-related groups across the nation. If you'd like to have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Do you really feel, Sue, that you learned something useful when candidates ignore the questionnaire altogether or ignore some or all of it? And, you know, the governor responded to, I think, every question on your questionnaire, but he responded with what he's done.
Absolutely.
Not what he's going to do. There's a difference, and doesn't it give him kind of an advantage over his challenger?
It does, but as Jim said, it shows as much what public policy or potential public policy people know about our issues. So there were no surprises in the answers, and you're right. People who are incumbents have an advantage in that I think we've done a pretty good job of educating them, or should have, on what the issues are. So it's telling that if they've been in office and they have been educated, even if they are regurgitating what they might have done, it's a reflective of us to how seriously they take those issues and how they're going to go on the next vote when they're in session.
Before Jim and Sue, you know, whoever, but this is not unusual. We just kind of picked your organization and picked your issues to talk about today because, you know, that's what kind of percolated to the top last week, I guess. But there's a lot of other organizations that we could be having the same conversation with that send out these questionnaires, have the same exact response, and always sound a little surprised when, look at, nobody responded, or why didn't anybody respond? So I guess I am wondering still about the ultimate value. What do the voters really learn?
Well, first, we know from data that we do that when we call voters with disabilities and ask them to encourage them to vote, we never tell them who to vote for or against.
Mm-hmm.
We talk in terms of issues. And most common question we get from voters is, well, who stands on what? So we have these questionnaires available to answer the question that we know we're going to get when we're phone banking.
Okay.
We also know that when we phone bank with this model, we can increase our turnout so that the folks who we talk to will vote at a rate that is higher than the turnout for the general population.
Now, Republican gubernatorial candidate John Kasich responded with a paragraph about how Ohioans who have disabilities and their families are important to the state and that they respect and support what they're trying to achieve, and that they'll marshal their resources and ideas to create common sense solutions, and that they're going to scour the country for examples of the best ways to provide these services in a comprehensive and integrated fashion. Is that a nice answer, or is it better than nothing, or what?
I can only, you know, I'll just speak for what it says to me.
Mm-hmm.
It says to me that he recognizes that our presence as a block of voters is growing and therefore important. It also says to me that he doesn't think we're important enough that he would take the time to answer very specific questions. We gave them plenty of time. It wasn't like they got this and they had to get it out the door even in the next week. What that says to me is either he didn't take the time to research and know what he's going to do, or he knows what he's going to do and we ain't going to like it.
How much time do you give them to answer the questions? Sue, is it different in Ohio? Did you?
Well, I can only answer how we handled it. We sent an email blast out to the candidates for governor, for the Ohio candidates for U.S. Senate and Secretary of State, and started that process in March. I can tell you that those were sent in March by email. Some of the campaigns were impossible to send the questionnaire to via email. So I did contact each of them by going onto their websites. Some of them had a form you filled out if you had a question, and I would inquire where to send those. And I did not bring with me who I contacted in what way. That was in March. In early April, we recontacted the campaigns that we hadn't heard from, and not only did we contact again by email, but I mailed by U.S. Postal Service the questionnaires to each campaign with a cover letter, and did it again at the end of April. In fact, when the Kasich campaign contacted me, they said that they had only received the questionnaire maybe 2 days before, which had been mailed 2 weeks in advance, so I don't know what happened there. I offered to the campaign to give more time. I said, we really want his response, more time, and they were willing to just stand on their statement, which was their choice. That was fine. And then in May, again, I reached out to the campaigns by email, even made some phone calls to a couple of the campaigns, was assured they'd respond, and they didn't. I want to hit the point at home again. 16% of Ohioans, or 1.5 million Ohioans, have disabilities. Those are ages 5 on up. But even in the children's age group, they have family members who many of these issues are important to.
How much do you think candidates and their advisors bank on the fact that although there is this thing in common, a disability of some stripe or another, that there are that voting block spans many other voting blocks, race, religion, you know, different kind of social issues, you name it.
We have data from the Harris polls done over the years. Yes, we all have different interests that go beyond our disability. But the Harris poll has shown for over a decade that with every election cycle, I think we're now up to about 60% of us, disability is going to be one of the top three factors that we use when deciding who to vote on. We've seen it grow by about, and I think that's a tribute to the ADA and the work that's been done there. But we've seen it grow by 8 or 12% every election cycle, and as I say now, we're up to just I think it's 59% of us use disability as one of the factors that when deciding who we're going to vote for.
So they do it at their peril. Now is what?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. We have to take a break. My guest, Jim Dixon. He is many things, but he is leading the Nonpartisan Disability Vote Project. It's a coalition of 36 disability-related groups across the nation. One of those is the Ohio Disability Vote Coalition, and the coordinator for that, Sue Hetrick, is also with us today. Joining us in a few minutes, Bob Clegg, a Republican strategist in Ohio. We'll be right back. Questions, comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On your drive home, get local updates with the award-winning WOSU News Team.
It's very important that policyholders read their policies from cover to cover because there may be some changes that are being implemented by the company that they may not agree with.
Homeowners insurance in Ohio is the sixth lowest in the country for average premiums. An average policy here costs $548 a year compared to Florida, where it costs about $1,500.
Hear the latest in local and national news with All Things Considered on WOSU 89.7 FM.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1021 this morning. Sunshine today and a beautiful day, a high of 83. Clouds tonight, a low of 63 degrees. A few more clouds for Wednesday and a high of 85. And looking ahead to Thursday, sunny and a little warmer with a high near 90. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about the questions we ask candidates and the ones they answer and the ones they don't. And often that includes candidate questionnaires. They're sent out by multitudes of groups out there. We're just focusing in today on the one that was sent out by the Ohio Disability Vote Coalition starting last March. The call went out for the questionnaire it went out to the candidates that they chose. In this case, the governor's race, the Secretary of State's race, and the U.S. Senate race in Ohio. That's the focus. But generally, you know, when I looked at their response and they said, "Gee, look who didn't respond," I thought, I get, as a political reporter, I used to get lots of those kinds of emails and press releases over the years from groups that said, look who didn't respond. And so it made me think, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of groups out there that do this. And so even though we're just focusing on disability rights, if you're interested in candidate questionnaires and why or why not, they're useful, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And joining us now, Bob Clegg. He is a Republican strategist. His background includes 14 years as an employee of the Ohio Senate, which is where I met him, the Ohio House of Representatives, and the Secretary of State. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Bob, you know, I know you think this is an obscure topic.
Yes, I can't believe anybody would be.
Well, but they're saying that there's a 16%, you know, voting block out there that does care about these issues. And so what – there must be candidate questionnaires out there that candidates do – answer or do respond to or are responsive to, at least, and others that they don't, and they must make calculations like that all the time about, is it worth it? Is it too much? Is it too much trouble? Is it going to be detrimental if they don't respond to it? And that kind of a thing. And I'm wondering what goes into it as a strategist. How do these kinds of questionnaires fit into your strategy?
Well, in the beginning, going back 20-some years ago when I was in the House, it was one of those things that was a no-brainer. You just filled them out. What happened, though, was we were finding that they became campaign issues. As you said earlier, the incumbent has an advantage because they have a knowledge base but also maybe some actual experience in that legislation in the area of interest that they're, you know, asking about. What we found with challengers is it opened up a line of attack because challengers, obviously, many of them don't have any kind of a track record. They may be running for the first time when they're running for state rep or state senate. They don't have any votes that you can go after. Mm-hmm. However, what we were finding is that answers to certain questions on certain questionnaires from groups would be used against a challenger. And we saw it just 2 years ago in the Ohio House races where a group sent out a questionnaire asking about, I think it was funding of autism programs.
Okay.
And many of the House Republican candidates filled that out. And then what we found out then later was that their answers were then being used in ads, TV ads, against them. As in, like, if you elect them, they're not going to be for funding for autism. So I think that whole, you know, using the questionnaire as a campaign weapon started influencing those of us on staff in the filling out of those forms. And then you have to start looking at a lot of organizations, I don't care if they're on the right or on the left, mm-hmm. Use their questionnaire as a platform to help the candidates that they like are going to be more helpful to them.
Did they write the questionnaires to help certain
candidates? Yeah, it's geared in – the questions are geared in such a way that they know – a lot of these groups are so sophisticated. They know what will sell to their particular audience, and they will ask questions then that will put an opponent or somebody that they know may not be friendly to their side at a disadvantage if they answer it. So we were seeing that more and more, and we became a lot more picky on staff of what were, you know, what groups we answered, what groups we didn't answer. And then even also, if we did answer it, how did you answer it? The wording and, you know, you have to be so careful.
You know, in preparing for this, I learned something new, as I often do every day. The Alliance for Justice, it's a national association of environmental, civil rights, mental health, women's, children's, and consumers advocacy organizations, which is neither here nor there. But what it does do is advise 501c3s on or nonprofit organizations among many other things, candidate questionnaires. And it says that they cannot be used to maintain that 501c3 status, that nonprofit status. You cannot use the questionnaires to show whether candidates agree with your views or vice versa.
But
you never hear anybody getting nailed for something like that.
No, I mean, you're not. But how that's careful, Anna, is that the group itself doesn't do these things. I mean, the groups don't go out there and run ads against the candidates that filled them out the wrong way. It's your opponent who is not connected to that group that's going to use it. So it's great they have that, but it really doesn't mean anything.
What kind of advice would you give special interest groups, for instance, you know, the disability rights community? And what kind of questionnaire has the best chance of getting a response, a substantive response?
Well, I mean, and it's I understand this would be, you know, very much opposed to why they do it. But I mean, if you don't make it public, then you probably would get a lot more truthful responses. Or if you do something, if you want to make arrangements, especially with the when we're talking the governor's race, U.S. Senate race, the big races, not necessarily all the state reps and state senators. But if they want to do a one-on-one, schedule a one-on-one with each of the candidates and talk to them, okay, these are our concerns. These are the issues we want to see addressed in the next 2 or 4 years. And what do you think? And you talk about whether they want to even take the time to fill out the questionnaire. The better question would be, will they take the time to meet with you, you know?
Okay. And let's take a call right now, 614-292-8513. If you'd like to talk to Bob Clegg, welcome to the show, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. This doesn't pertain necessarily to rights for disabled, but
right.
Rather to politicians in general.
Right.
I cannot blame them. I cannot blame them for not telling us the truth. The truth is, the fact is, if they tell the truth, we won't elect them. We want them to promise to cut our taxes while they're going to improve the highways, improve the schools, improve the infrastructure, give us more Medicare payments. That's not possible, and I blame we voters for being uninformed and unrealistic.
Okay. Bob, Sue? They just pointed to each other. This is radio, and you can't see it. Let me ask you this, Bob. What about organizations, and I saw this in my research, some organizations say you may not use this information to, you know, in political advertisements or whatever.
Once it's in the public domain, it's in the public domain.
Right.
And you know, they're going to use it. I mean, look at where politics has gone so far now.
Oh, I can't stand
with trackers that are filming every single moment that the candidate is on the stump. So, if we're at that point, I mean, a questionnaire, really. I mean, what difference does that make? I mean, they'll use it if they can for anything that they, you know, in an election that they can.
Mike, how should people become informed voters? What's your suggestion?
Well, first of all, they should listen to WOSU.
God love you, Mike. All right. So besides that excellent suggestion, but really, if you have a special interest, a legitimate special interest, your kid has autism or, you know, it could be anything. It could be the, you know, gun rights. It could be the Second Amendment. It could be the First Amendment, whatever it is. How are they supposed to educate themselves?
I guess, well, if you're talking about the specific interest, wow, how you filter out the different groups that have an axe to grind in the worst sense of the word versus those that inform you, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a tough question. There's media overload today. We have more more media and information available than ever, but there's almost too much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There are states where the State Board of Elections asks an objective set of questions that each candidate answers or doesn't, and those are then distributed by the state to all voters.
I'm glad you reminded me. I always refer to League of Women Voters, which you can find online, and that's a nonpartisan group that gives questions to each of the candidates and about the different issues and allows the candidates to say in, say, 200 words or less, what do you think is the most important thing about being a municipal judge? And some choose not to answer. To me, that's a real strong strike against you. But you can read through it and try to read through the lines and at least see whether they are capable of coming up with an intelligent answer.
Okay. Mike, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Take care. If a candidate doesn't respond, Bob, does it send a message?
Sometimes it can send a message that they don't really care. I don't think, though, the vast majority of candidates don't care. I think what they care about is, you know, how they can answer it in the best way possible without it being somehow a negative form. And I think that's more what's going on with these questionnaires. I think and the other thing, which we can't forget, is the number of questionnaires that candidates get
right
now have just multiplied.
Well,
what is
typical? I mean, what do you see out there?
Oh, I mean, for a statewide candidate that's running for governor, I would say you easily are getting into the hundreds probably of questionnaires that they get over a six-month period of time before the election from various groups. And in those races, you're not only getting them from groups like here in Ohio, but you're also getting them from national groups too. So, I mean, when you're talking U.S. Senate race, a governor's race, I mean, you're literally talking hundreds of questionnaires.
So is this something obscure as it is that strategists sit down and sift through, or is there a rule of thumb, or what do you look at all of them and decide which ones are important
and
prioritize?
When I did a statewide race back in 1990, we would get them in the mail back in there, those days. U.S. Postal System. And we would sit down and we would go over each one, open it, look at it, talk to the candidate about it, and try to answer them all. I mean, our first instinct is to try to answer. You do not like to not send in an answer, period. Because I think just having no reply on there next to your name is not a good thing.
It means you don't matter at all.
Yeah. I mean, it sends the wrong message.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to answer it in such a way that, it makes everybody understand where the candidate's at, but at the same time can't be used against it.
Do candidates in your experience tend to want to answer them?
Yes.
Their natural
inclination? Candidates, they want to make everybody happy. Whatever they can do. I don't think candidates' first instinct is to say, no, I don't want to answer. No, I think they want to answer, but they also want to be careful about it too.
So what about the half answer? I think your issues are important and I'm going to work really hard when I get elected to achieve the goals that, to make life work better for you.
Well, that's so generic it may as well not have been answered at all, in my opinion.
So you don't think it's not better than nothing?
Let Jim answer that.
I agree. I think it's not better than nothing. One of the biggest problems that we face as people with disabilities and that the rest of the population face towards us is they see us as objects of pity. And a general, and I'm very tired of being seen as an object of pity, an object that has to be taken care of,
mm-hmm.
of somehow being deserving because I'm blind. And so when I hear those general statements, it reminds me of all the experiences I've had over my lifetime where I had somebody say, you can't see and I know what's best for you. Trust me. I think a candidate who really respected us as a voting bloc would reach out and say, well, let's talk about these questions.
So what about the idea that
some and no to others?
What about the idea that Bob had for sitting down with a candidate and asking them to sit down?
A plus, great idea.
I think it's a great idea, but if our purpose is to educate our constituency, if our purpose is to educate 16% of Ohio's population, we're going to turn around and tell that population what we heard in these conversations. That's our purpose, to educate them so they can go to the polls and make an informed choice. This is probably a good time to talk about some of the questions on our questionnaire. They weren't disability specific in terms of a particular kind of disability. Mm-hmm. They referred to issues of accessible transportation, affordable, accessible housing, issues of education for students with disabilities, the issue of Medicaid in institutionalized care versus home and community-based care. Those are all questions that can and well pertain to most of the population in Ohio at some point in their lives, either for themselves or a family member. So to say that they're incidental or they're obscure, I'm having a little struggle with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, each group, Bob. No one ever thinks they're obscure.
Yeah, and you know what? They aren't. I mean, for that group of people, they aren't obscure, and I think they have every right to send in a questionnaire. However, I think we also have to be careful here. Sure, there are many times a generalized answer that really doesn't get to the point of the questions. Okay, I understand that, but also I've seen, candidates give very specific answers to very specific questions, and then as soon as they get elected, I got elected, I didn't, we have budget problems, who would have thought that I couldn't be able to fulfill these things? I think many candidates fill these things out with the intention that, things will change and I don't have to worry about my answers right now, as long as I can get them what they want to hear.
We have an email right now from Nicholas, writes, imagine how shocking it would be if candidates neglected to address issues of race, gender, or religion in their campaigning. Obviously, they would be discredited to great political effect. The fact that candidates often neglect disability as a campaign issue makes clear the need for organization and lobbying on behalf of this massive voting bloc. For the guests, will you speak to the disparity between the extent to which candidates are sensitive to issues of race or gender as compared to disability? Why does that disparity exist and how can we decrease it? We have Mark Melman coming on. He may have some ideas about that, too, coming up in the next segment. But Sue and Jim?
I think each of those other constituencies has been organized to the point where they have defeated candidates who did not support their issues. And the next step for us as a community is for enough of us to vote so that incumbents who were for cutting programs lose.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we return, Mark Melman, Democratic political strategist, pollster, and your questions and comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
See the new lineup of public affairs programming on Friday nights from WOSU-TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record at 8:30. Continuing at 9 is the McLaughlin Group. And at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know, a new program with an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Watch the new public affairs lineup every Friday night beginning at 8 on WOSU-TV.
And this is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides this morning. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program will be here, and we'll hear about Broadway show tours, including the record-breaking tour of Wicked. And we'll hear a little bit about the musical from two of the performers' point of view. That is Wicked on All Sides at 11 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And it's 72 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning. Sunshine today and a high of 83 degrees. A few clouds tonight and a low of 63. Clouds for Wednesday and a high of 85. Discover more about WOSU Public Media online at WOSU.org. Sign up for the Daily News Loop for updates sent right to your inbox. Get the best in trusted WOSU and NPR news and information every weekday. Sign up for the Daily News Loop at WOSU.org/email. And All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now is Mark Melman. Mark is a top pollster and political strategist for Democratic candidates and issues. His current clients include the majority leaders of both the House and Senate. Mark also is the author of a recent column about why disabled people are a key constituency. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Pleasure to be with you.
We're talking about that old-fashioned idea of asking candidates a question and getting an answer in a questionnaire, perhaps.
Absolutely.
In the column that you wrote for The Hill last week, you note the size of the people with disabilities voting bloc, some 15 million actual voters in 2008. You said it was nearly as large as the African-American vote, 50% larger than the Latino vote, and many times larger than the Jewish vote. And you note that it's a swing vote as well. Yet the responses to their questionnaires pretty much across the board are lackluster at best.
Well, you know, I think there are a couple reasons for that. First of all, I think these days these questionnaires are importantly used as negative devices by opponents. Everybody scours the questionnaire of their opponent looking for something to attack them on, and that's true on any subject.
Mm-hmm.
So candidates, I think, are increasingly reluctant to break new ground or to be particularly open and fulsome in their responses to those questionnaires. But I think, secondly, there has been a sense among politicians that the disability community is not a particularly important political constituency. I happen to think that perception is dead wrong. And that's part of what I tried to point out in my column.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is a widespread perception. You know, people look at the Latino community as a significant block, and it is. They look at African-American voters. They look at union members. They look at Jewish voters. They look at a whole bunch of groups and say, boy, these are significant blocks that we really need to worry about, really need to pay attention to, really need to devote campaign resources to. And hardly any campaigns think about the disability community in quite that same way.
Jim Dixon earlier, he's the leader of the Nonpartisan Disability Vote Project. He mentioned earlier that one thing is that the disability community hasn't organized its vote like the Latino voting bloc has, like the African-American voting bloc. Do you think that's the case?
Well, Jim would know better than I, to tell you the truth, but I think that's true. I think it's not perceived as a highly organized organized bloc. But I think there's also just a general lack of appreciation on the side of the political community in terms of just how large this segment of the electorate is, and the fact that it is a swing segment of the electorate at that.
So it's safe to ignore these questionnaires for them, but maybe not for other groups that are perceived as more organized.
That's right. Well, you know, nobody likes to, you know, be ignored. So I think most campaigns don't ignore any questionnaires except those they really don't want to answer. But people, I think, don't put the same time, effort, and energy into it, into the disability community as they do to others. Though, again, as I say, people, campaigns are reluctant to put too much out there in these questionnaires because they just know it provides material to be attacked on by their opponents.
So why do them? How are voters, you know, from your point of view, your perspective, how are they supposed to get enough information to make their decisions?
It's really hard. There's no question about it. You can't envy the voters. You know, the truth is there's lots of information out there, but it's not all that easily accessible. It's not all that easily understandable. Obviously, both campaigns are on TV and in your mailbox, on your telephone, trying to convince you of their point of view. They spend a lot of time, effort, and energy to do that. There are other kinds of resources. You know, you can look up and see what the votes are and so on and so forth. But these things are not self-explanatory. The reality is you can't look at the congressional record and know exactly what people are voting on. And the truth is most voters would have a hard time navigating through the congressional record to find out how their senator or congressman voted and what that vote really meant, what that vote really signified. So there's an important role for the press in that. But the reality is also that the press has, frankly, declined. There's much less political press than there has been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And even the political press that remains sort of divides into two categories. There are those people who say, look, my job is to report what each side says. I'm not about finding the truth. There are other people who say, I want to find out what the truth is. But, of course, at the end of the day, that's just their version of the truth as they see it. Voters are in a very difficult position. It's hard to know what all the facts are and to be able to make these kinds of judgments really intelligently.
I was looking at Project Vote Smart's website, and they said that they've determined after extensive research of public polling data that voters are more concerned with what candidates would support, not what they oppose.
Well, you know, that's what they say, but it's not always true. You know, people will tell you they hate negative ads, but it's sort of like Listerine. They hate it, but they use it. That negative information in political campaigns and, frankly, in everyday life happens to be very important to the way we make decisions. There's 30 years of research in psychology that tells us people process negative information more quickly and more deeply than they process positive information. You know, when you think about it, if you're trying to hire somebody and you get 100 resumes, what are you looking for in that first cut? You're looking for the information that's going to disqualify that person. You're looking for somebody who's going to be a secretarial position and they can't type. Well, that disqualifies them. That's a negative. Mm-hmm. So that is just the natural way that people process information, and that's why we see those negative ads. If they didn't work, candidates wouldn't use them.
If a candidate does not select a response to any part or all of a questionnaire, Project VoteSmart posits that it doesn't necessarily indicate that the candidate is opposed to that particular item. Why is it just because it could be used against them or twisted and skewed in some way?
Well, that's right. I mean, oftentimes these questionnaires, are from particular groups are putting complex issues in pretty simple yes or no terms, or support or oppose a particular piece of legislation, or have a yes or no answer. And a lot of these public policy questions are not so simple. They don't have simple yes or no answers. And so candidates are reluctant just to say yes or no. They want a more fulsome explanation. And these questionnaires don't always give them the opportunity to provide that more nuanced explanation.
In the last segment, we had a Republican strategist on, Bob Clegg, and he said that since he's been doing this in the 80s, there's been a proliferation of these kinds of questionnaires, not a decline, even though the response to them has declined.
Absolutely. I mean, we've noticed that as well. Every group, every interest has a questionnaire that they want a candidate to fill out, and that is the right of these groups mm-hmm. in a democratic system such as ours. And it's from their point of view, it's a good thing. They should be demanding answers from their candidates. That's the right thing for them to do. But the other truth is they can overwhelm campaigns. Their campaigns only have so much time, so many resources, so many personnel, and there's only so many questionnaires, therefore, that you can answer, and that necessarily means some are going to get ignored.
Sue Hetrick, how do you decide what goes on your questionnaire? How did you decide on those questions?
Well, ODVC has a steering committee, so we met several times to design the questions and deliberately wrote them in a way that they weren't yes and no questions, and so that they couldn't possibly be skewed, you know, towards one party or another. What policies would you support? How would you support the issues of transportation, housing, employment, education, and so forth?
Mark is right. We are a swing vote. There's data that shows that, and you know, disability can occur to anybody. And you know, chances are, if you wind up having a disability and you're a native and you're living in Cleveland, you're likely to be a Democrat. But by the same turn, if somebody happens to get a disability and they're living in a largely Republican farm community, they're likely to be a Republican. So we want each party to see us as significant voters, and a fair number of us are independents and will go either way, depending on what the candidates say about our issues.
Mark, as this voting block coalesces over time, I mean, are questionnaires like this going to be part of the solution for them, or is it something else?
Well, I think, as I said, almost every group these days has a questionnaire that they want candidates to fill out, and that is an important tool, but it's only one important tool. Jim's obviously, you know, played a leading role in organizing disability voters in a whole lot of ways. That's an important part of the effort as well. In addition, the lobbying work that gets done in state legislatures and in Congress matters. So there's a whole lot of ways to organize communities. Questionnaires are one piece of it, and it's a vital piece of it, but it's only one piece of the puzzle.
When someone's reading a questionnaire, the responses to a questionnaire, if I'm just an average voter with a special interest, how should I look at it? What do you think about, you know, when they don't answer?
Well, as I say, when they don't answer, it could be because they don't have an opinion. It could be because they're afraid to give the answer, or it could be because they don't feel they can give the proper answer given the constraints of the questionnaire. Obviously, you know, we were just hearing about a questionnaire that's designed to allow people to allow candidates to not just give yes or no answers, but frankly, many questionnaires do require these yes or no answers. So, you know, I wouldn't interpret the silence on anything in any particular way, except to say you're just not getting in the information you might like to have on that particular stance. There's always a way to look at candidates' websites, to call campaigns, and if a question isn't answered on a questionnaire, voters would be wise to call the candidates on it, literally call them on the phone, email them, look at their websites, and see if they can figure out what the candidate's position is on that particular issue.
Sue? I agree with that, and that's one thing that we will be encouraging our constituency to do, since one of our goals is to engage people in the political process. The fact that these weren't answered, we're asking them, when these campaigns come to your town, when these candidates come to your town, ask these questions. I do have a question of Jim and Mark, and I wish Mr. Clegg was still here to answer it. The American Association of People with Disabilities, the NAACP on a state level, they are obviously informing their constituencies about positions of candidates. If they're not doing it by questionnaire, how are they doing that? How would they address this kind of issue?
Well, I would say, this is Mark, and I would say that I can't speak for any of those specific organizations, but in general, if for those that don't have a questionnaire, and frankly, even for those that do, often candidates put together a position paper on a particular issue that doesn't necessarily address a preset group of questions, but obviously tries to articulate the candidate's position in that positions in that general sphere of public policy. Second, a lot of candidates have records. They may have a record on the city council. They may have a record in the state legislature, in the Congress, in the Senate, as the mayor, or whatever. And those records honestly tell you a lot more about what their positions are than how they fill out a questionnaire or what they put in a position paper.
Benjamin Franklin said that democracy is two wolves and a lamb sitting down to decide what to have for lunch.
Yeah.
Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting an election. So I think it's always a struggle to get information. We see the questionnaire as just one of several tools.
Mark Melman, you know, I just want to go back to your commentary in The Hill about the ADA voters as a key constituency. It was only after you suffered an injury yourself that temporarily disabled you, and it is kind of an interesting concept when you think about what you went through and the idea that you can't change the color of your skin. All things being equal, you don't change your religion or your ethnicity, but everybody could wind up disabled.
You know, that's absolutely true, and you really do get a different appreciation of what it means. And you know, obviously, there's a huge difference between being in a wheelchair for 2 or 3 weeks, as I was, and being in a wheelchair for the rest of one's life, or all of one's life, as many people are. But you do get a different perspective on things when you see it through someone else's eyes. And as you say, it's different to be another race. It's different to be another ethnicity and to see the world through the eyes of that other segment of society. But as Jim said, anyone and everyone can become disabled, and even temporarily, and it's possible to at least glimpse the world through the eyes of the disabled community, frankly, in a way it's not with lots of other groups.
What's your advice to organizations like this coalition that are putting out candidate questionnaires? What kind of questionnaires are most likely to get a response?
Well, the kind that are backed by strong organizations, first and foremost. Candidates don't want to disappoint groups or organizations that they think are politically powerful. So the more power you appear to have, the more likely you are to get your questions answered. Second, I think questionnaires that don't ask just for simple yes or no answers. There may be some things that are yes or no. How would you vote on our piece of legislation? That is a yes or no question, and frankly, people deserve a yes or no answer to that question. There are other kinds of policy prescriptions that may be much more much more difficult to put into yes or no form. So my suggestion would be questionnaires that have multiple approaches, some yes, no, some more essay kind of questions, if you will, that give people more opportunity to express positions. But look, the most important thing is to be seen as an important constituency. The more important the constituency, the more likely the questions are to get answered.
Jim?
Amen. That's why we're organizing. That's why we're doing phone banks. That's why after elections we go in and we look to see who of our folks actually voted. This is a process. For candidates, it's always about this election. For those of us with disabilities, it's about respect and using the electoral process through a number of elections to change the way we are treated and perceived.
Can any of this, Mark Melman, fight or contrast in any effective way with the amount of money that's poured into campaign advertising on television and radio?
Well, there's no question that unfortunately money talks and talks very loudly in our electoral process, and most of that money goes to TV stations and to the post office. For radio stations for communication, that's the most important thing that most campaigns do. But the reality is that only matters insofar as there's a fertile ground for that communication to take hold. And so the organizing that all kinds of constituencies do, the information that they put out can make a vital difference. In an election that's not otherwise going to be close, nothing really makes a difference. But in a very close election, anything can make a difference. Any constituency, any group, any TV ad, anything can make all the difference in the world between winning and losing. And that's how most candidates approach most of these decisions, with the clear recognition that anything they do, anything they say, can be decisive.
It really matters to people with disabilities when they see a TV ad and there's a crowd shot. If there's somebody with a disability in that crowd, that's an important message. If there's not, then for some of us, that's also an important message.
All righty, we've run out of time. Mark Melman, President and CEO of the Melman Group, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Also, Sue Hetrick of the Ability Center of Greater Toledo, also she's Public Policy Director, and also Jim Dixon of the Vice President for Organizing and Civic Engagement for the AAPPD. Thanks for joining us today, Jim.
Thank you, Ann.
And Sue, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ann.
We're out of time now. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.